From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The scale of civilian casualties and damage to civilian infrastructure, even in these very early days, is alarming.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine has entered its sixth day. As a 40-mile Russian military convoy heads toward Kiev, while Russia bombs Ukraine's second-largest city. We'll go to Kiev to speak with a Ukrainian peace activist. Then a 500,000 civilians have fled Ukraine.
It is so scary. You don't know what will happen. A bomb can fall at any minute, and there's nothing you can do. All day, the air raid sirens go off in all the towns. It's very scary.
Plus, we look at the roots of the crisis in Ukraine with Andrew Coburn of Harper's Magazine and Yale University professor Timothy Snyder. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukraine's government has accused Russia of war crimes for deliberately targeting civilians during its invasion of Ukraine. New satellite photos show a massive 40-mile convoy of Russian tanks and armored vehicles stretching from the Russian border to the outskirts of Ukraine's capital, Kiev. Ukrainian officials say troops from Belarus have joined Russia's invasion. Elsewhere, Russia's military has begun shelling residential areas of Kharkiv, Ukraine's second-largest city. Today, a Russian missile struck Kharkiv's local government building, leaving a massive crater in the city center, known as Freedom Square. Another Russian assault on Monday destroyed a children's clothing factory in Kharkiv.
This is a residential area with no military objects, and people lived very close to this building where the missile hit.
Human rights groups say Russia's used thermobaric weapons in its assault. These so-called vacuum bombs are the most powerful non-nuclear explosives used in warfare. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch documented a Russian cluster bomb attack on a hospital in eastern Ukraine that killed 4 civilians, injured another 10. A United Nations treaty banning the use of cluster munitions has been signed by over 100 nations, although Russia, Ukraine and the United States have refused to sign on to the prohibition. On Monday, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky accused Russia of war crimes for deliberately targeting civilians. He spoke after Russian and Ukrainian officials met on the Belarusian border to discuss a possible ceasefire. Those talks failed.
These talks took place while our territory, our cities were being bombed and shelled. We could see the synchronization of the shelling with the negotiation process. I believe that in this unsophisticated way, Russia is trying to apply pressure. Don't waste our time. We do not accept such tactics.
Earlier today, President Zelensky addressed the European Parliament by video link. On Monday, he called on the European Union to grant Ukraine immediate membership to the 27-nation bloc. At The Hague, a prosecutor for the International Criminal Court said Monday he'll launch an investigation into possible war crimes or crimes against humanity committed by Russia in Ukraine. At the United Nations, the General Assembly began an emergency session Monday to debate a draft resolution calling on Russia to end its military campaign. This is UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Yesterday, Russian nuclear forces were put on high alert. This is a chilling development. The mere idea of a nuclear conflict is simply inconceivable. Nothing can justify the use of nuclear weapons.
The oil and gas giant Shell said Monday it'll exit its joint ventures with Russia's state-owned energy company Gazprom. Shell has about $3 billion invested in Russian operations. This follows a similar move by BP to offload its Russian operations as other oil companies, including ExxonMobil and Total, come under pressure to divest. In Moscow, Russia's central bank more than doubled its interest rate to 20% to prevent the further collapse of Russia's currency after governments around the world imposed sanctions. The value of the ruble dropped to less than 1 U.S. cent on Monday. That's about 1/20th of the ruble's value in 2014 before Russia's annexation of Crimea. United Nations warns some 4 million refugees could leave Ukraine in the coming weeks. Filippo Grandi is the UN High Commissioner for Refugees.
As we speak, there are 520,000 refugees from Ukraine in neighboring countries. This figure has been rising exponentially, hour after hour, literally, since Thursday.
More than half of those who fled have crossed Ukraine's western border into Poland. Foreign nationals report they've been barred from crossing, even as Ukrainian citizens have been welcomed with open arms. India's government's dispatch ministers to Ukraine's borders after Indians seeking to cross into Poland reported they were turned around and told to go to Romania instead. Citizens of several African countries report they were pushed back from Poland because they're black. This is Eli Mbama, a student from Congo.
We had to stay outside, exposed to the freezing weather that they have here. Nobody tells us where we can find shelter, and we are left out in the cold.
Last November, Poland massed troops along its border, firing tear gas and water cannons to block thousands of refugees, most of them from the Middle East, from crossing into Poland, where they were seeking asylum in the EU. That contrasts with about 300,000 Ukrainian refugees welcomed to Poland within just the last several days. Major international news outlets are facing backlash over racist comments made by correspondents comparing the invasion of Ukraine to conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine, and other regions outside of Europe. Correspondents from Al Jazeera English, The Telegraph, CBS News, and others have suggested Ukrainians and their resistance are more worthy of sympathy because they're, quote, civilized and white. This is Charlie DeGatta, senior correspondent of CBS News, speaking on air Friday.
This isn't a place, with all due respect, like Iraq or Afghanistan, that has seen conflict raging for decades. You know, this is a relatively civilized, relatively European, I have to choose those words carefully too, city where you wouldn't expect that or hope that it's going to happen.
The Arab and Middle Eastern Journalists Association condemns such comments as orientalist and racist. The group added, quote, this type of commentary reflects the pervasive mentality in Western journalism of normalizing tragedy in parts of the world, such as the Middle East, Africa, South Asia, and Latin America. It dehumanizes and renders their experience with war as somehow normal and expected, unquote. In Australia, torrential rains and record flooding have inundated the eastern states of Queensland and New South Wales, killing at least 8 people, forcing tens of thousands to evacuate. Residents could be seen taking refuge on rooftops as the fast-rising waters submerge their homes. This is the Premier of New South Wales.
Simply because your community has not flooded in the past does not mean that it will not flood over the course of this week. What we are seeing today is unprecedented, and the advice that we have received is that we would expect things to get worse over this period of time.
Back in the United States, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on Monday in a case brought by coal companies against the Environmental Protection Agency. Coal executives are challenging the EPA's authority to regulate carbon emissions from power plants under the Clean Air Act. Justices with the court's conservative majority appeared sympathetic to arguments that the Obama and Biden administrations exceeded their authority when the EPA and not Congress sought to regulate greenhouse gases. President Biden will be addressing a joint session of Congress this evening in his first State of the Union address. Ahead of the speech, the Pentagon called up several hundred National Guard soldiers. Meanwhile, police re-erected a security barrier on Capitol grounds that was first set up last year in the wake of the January 6th insurrection. Far-right groups have announced plans for a trucker convoy protest outside the State of the Union, modeled after protests that paralyzed the Canadian Capitol for weeks. Those plans are in doubt after several trucks involved in the so-called People's Convoy crashed in Oklahoma on their way to Washington, D.C. In California, a father fatally shot his 3 children Monday during a supervised family visit at a church near Sacramento. The shooter also killed a person who may have been supervising the visit before taking his own life. The mother of the children reportedly had a restraining order against the father, which should have prevented him from obtaining a firearm. The children were 9, 10, and 13 years old. In the past 7 days, there have been over 700 gun-related deaths in the U.S., according to the Shock Market, a new online tool that tracks gun violence. And a Democrat-led bill in Congress would have codified abortion rights into federal law. It's been blocked by the Senate. Conservative Democratic Senator Joe Manchin joined Senate Republicans who used the threat of a filibuster to block the Women's Health Protection Act. The legislation was approved by House Democrats last year in response to a wave of state laws almost completely banning abortion. This is Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray.
Republicans have made it abundantly clear they want a world in which they, as politicians, get to decide what women can do with their bodies, their lives, and their futures. That is not what the vast majority of Americans want. The vast majority of Americans want a country where the very personal, individual decision about pregnancy is, wait for it, up to the individual.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our viewers and listeners across the country and around the world.
Well, the Russian invasion of Ukraine has entered its sixth day, with Russia escalating its bombardment. Satellite images show up to a 40-mile convoy of Russian armored vehicles, tanks, and artillery heading to Kiev, the capital of Ukraine. Earlier today, a Russian missile hit a government building in Kharkiv, causing a huge explosion in Ukraine's second-largest city. Civilian areas in Kharkiv have also been shelled. Ukrainian authorities also reported more than 70 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed in the eastern city of Okhtyrka after a Russian missile strike on a military base. On Monday, Ukraine and Russia held 5 hours of talks near the Belarus border, but no agreement was reached. The two sides are expected to meet again in the coming days. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has called for a no-fly zone over Ukraine, but the United States and its allies have ruled out the idea, saying it could lead to a broader war. Ukraine and human rights groups have also accused Russia of targeting civilians with cluster and thermobaric bombs. Those so-called vacuum bombs are the most powerful non-nuclear explosives used in warfare. Russia has denied targeting civilians or civilian infrastructure. Meanwhile, the International Criminal Courts announced plans to investigate war crimes in Ukraine. At the United Nations, the General Assembly held an emergency meeting Monday to discuss the crisis. This is Ukraine's Ambassador Sergei Kislytsy.
If Ukraine does not survive, international peace will not survive. If Ukraine does not survive, the United Nations will not survive. Have no illusions. If Ukraine does not survive, we cannot be surprised if democracy fails next. Now we can save Ukraine, save the United Nations, save democracy, and defend the values we believe in.
And just before we went to broadcast, the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, addressed the European Parliament by video. At the end, the parliament gave him a standing ovation. We go now to Kiev, where we're joined by Yuri Shelyashenko. He is the executive secretary of the Ukrainian pacifist movement and a board member of the European Bureau of Conscientious Objection. Yuri is also a member of the board of directors at World Beyond War and a research associate at Kroc University in Kiev. Yuri Shelyashenko, welcome back to Democracy Now! We spoke to you just before the Russian invasion. Can you talk about what's happening on the ground right now and what you are calling for as a pacifist?
Good day. Thank you for balanced journalism and covering peace process, a part of pains and passions of war. Military polarization between the East and West went too far with reckless military operations, NATO expansion, Russian invasion to Ukraine and nuclear threats to world, militarization of Ukraine with exclusion of Russia from international institutions and expulsions of Russian diplomats, literally pushing Putin from diplomacy to escalation of war. Instead of breaking the last bonds of humanity out of rage, we need more than ever.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will bring a few flurries and a high of minus 5 degrees Celsius. Thursday will be mainly sunny with a high of minus 10 degrees Celsius. Friday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of minus 8 degrees Celsius. Saturday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of minus 5 degrees Celsius. Sunday there will be snow and a high of 3 degrees Celsius. Monday will bring mixed precipitation and a high of 3 degrees Celsius. Finally, Tuesday will be sunny with a high of 0 degrees Celsius.
Yeah. Cicada. Whoa. Yeah. I'm a chameleon. See my color changes. See what you be feeding from my lust for you be fading. Ooh, I'm a chameleon. Ready for a change. Yeah. Stir it up. Old colors never fade. Nah. A chameleon. Yeah, I'm blending in. Yeah. Mix it up. These tones are coming from within. Ooh, a chameleon. Colors like the rainbow. Without these nuances, I wouldn't have the same glow. Wet paint. This is slippery. Slippery. Playing with the fate of what is meant to be. Check my destiny. What is written in the stars? Whoa. Talking about astrology. This tour is going hard.
To the current. Or what has been. Can't adopt, I can handle most things. Try me in down or uphill, I'm sure to melt down.
Chameleon, check my tendencies. Yeah. Keeping it organically. Whoa. Staying true to the roots, even overseas. Not a straight path, I'll get there eventually. Yeah, I know that I'm vain.
Cosmetic.
This from top to toe, yeah, I care for the aesthetic. Dressing up to reflect, dressing up to impress. These are stains from the dye, it adds up to the effect. Cause I'm here to set a brand, I'm here to make a mark. But this shit is permanent, this the stuff you can't wash off. So don't try to transform, I'm taking different shapes. Might be far from home, still the candle on the cake.
To the current, or what has been. I can't adapt, I can handle most things. Try me in down or uphill, I'm sure to melt in. I've seen places, yeah, I can't comply. No one or two things on how to get by. Try me in head or tailwind, I'm sure to melt in.
Oasis Immersion at the Palais de Congrès promises a digital light and sound experience in a series of gallery halls. Today we have Johnny Ranger, Welcome to the show, Johnny. First, please introduce yourself and tell us about Oasis Immersion.
My name is Johnny Ranger.
Okay, and what do you do, Johnny Ranger?
I'm a co-director of Creation, the founder.
And the name of this organization is Oasis?
Oasis Immersion.
Oasis Immersion. And what is the history of Oasis Immersion?
Well, it's a young history because it's only, we're celebrating our first year anniversary. So it's really new. But the founders had worked with a media company. They had worked with the Christie Projector, with another partner who's a lawyer. And they started this to have something that they wouldn't be at the service of necessarily client-based work. It would be like really their own creation process and to create exhibition for the grand public directly. So it started like, you know, the project maybe started 2-3 years ago as a concept, and then it got like really open, really like allowed to open last February. So this is why now is the first year. This is the second exhibition. Usually there's exhibition that lasts around 6 months. It doesn't mean it will always be like this, but so far we create this pattern of like an exhibition that is there to stay, so people can, like, you know, big museum exhibition where people can really come see it. And it's interesting with this exhibition presently because these type of work that you see here, these generative art pieces in the electronic media, usually they're seen in a festival, in electronic festival. Like, you know, you can see some in Electra or New Tech. And these are a festival that are like 4 or 5 days usually. It's pretty rare that you will see these pieces on display for that long of a period. The goal, the mission of Oasis, like the name says, is it's a place where you can come to here to get resource. It's an oasis in the downtown area that creates things that are thoughtful or experiential or, you know, different feel-good experience.
How long will the Oasis Immersion be running here at the Palais de Congrès?
We're here to stay.
So like, this will be like at the Palais de Congrès permanently?
Yeah, it's a permanent exhibition.
I found it very relaxing. Was it meant to be a relaxing immersion?
This one, particularly, it's called Rechargé en Wine. This is the name of the exhibition. So the goal is really to create, yes, a really like a feeling. Like in French we say bien-être, so it's really like to recharge, to resource, to put you in a place where you feel really good.
And who was involved in the creation and realization of the Oasis Immersion?
It's the Oasis Immersion team that are the curators and the concepts for this exhibition. We had also Louis-Philippe Saint-Arnaud, who's a guest curator, to help out like find some different type of artists. And then we had a selection within our group of which artists was more appropriate to create a theme of the exhibition that would be kind of a pathway, like between three different rooms. One is a relaxation room, one is a stimulation room, and the last one is a reconnection room. So we had to find piece that would create this kind of like a pathway of experience.
So how would you describe the exhibition if you were to describe it from the opening door to the end door?
Yeah.
What would a person see coming in?
Well, I think it's really like the difference between, example, our first exhibition was really an exhibition that could integrate some cinematic moments, some documentary moments, artistic or musical moments. Here, this experience is mostly an abstract experience. It's a sound and visual effect that sometimes there's no reference of narrative-based content. It's really, really like experience of sound and visuals that are linked together, that are mostly made by each piece. There's 10 pieces. They're mostly made by one or two artists, sometimes a visual artist with a musician. So it's not like a studio-based work. It's really like very personal work that are made by different artists. So the people who come in, they're really in for seeing something they didn't see before so many times, because it's really personal work made with digital art. And it's pretty rare that we see them in big space like this. For the artists, it's a great opportunity, because, you know, as you enter here, I think what will stand out in the as you go through the gallery is how much the floor becomes important, how much the floor has an impact. And it's very rare we walk on projection. And that projection on the floor really unites everybody that's in the room, because it connects to everybody that's there. So there's all the walls that are taken. It's a 360 full round experience. And these pieces, like each room, yeah, like when you arrive in the first room, there's really definitely the three pieces that are there. You can go see them after. It's really like it unplugs you from the outside world. It makes you calm down. It's really like it slows down the rhythm. And then as you go to the second room, it creates a bit of a different effect where it's stimulated. You'll see the pieces that are there. It's more energizing somehow.
Will this exhibition continue to evolve over the next year, or is it sort of point finale right now? This is the exhibition, you can see it, you've got an hour and a quarter, and that's it.
There's talks like that. Maybe we, you know, I can't say right now too much, but stay tuned. It's possible there's a few variations to come, but it's not for sure yet.
And if a listener in the audience happened to be an artist and became interested in the exhibition, who would they get in touch with to learn more?
Yeah, well, they can go on the website and send a message to, there's a contact information, and then it will come. We're always curious to see if there's interesting artists that have experience in the work like that. And yeah, we definitely keep our ears open for the newcomers also.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Hey, my pleasure.
You've been listening to Johnny Ranger speaking about the Oasis Immersion at the Palais de Congress. It's going to be here all year long, so please come out for an immersive experience.
This exhibition right now will end around April, unless there's a change, but I mean, it's not going for another year. So it's a good time to come see it. February, March, it's a good time to go see it. You know, like beat the weather and come and enjoy an Oasis moment.
How much does the Oasis immersive experience cost?
The tickets are around like something like $24, $29. I'm not so sure personally because I didn't look in a while. But you go see the website oasis.im, and there you have the ticket info and all the schedules, because it's not open every day. The Monday, Tuesday is closed usually. So it's open from Wednesday night till Sunday.
Okay. Well, thank you again for your interview today. As I said, you've been listening to Johnny Ranger speaking about the Oasis Immersion at the Palais de Congress. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Thank you.
I'll take my time walking this uphill dead end street, 'cause we poured our dreams into the melting pot. Up on a shelf we label some forgotten name. Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Those days ago, those days ago, my darling.
Hello and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized informative podcast that's aimed to be listened to while you're in the shower, but really it can be listened to anywhere at all.
The whole point of this podcast is we take the mysteries of the world and debunk them in a bite-sized format. Questions you've always wondered the answer to, but never really bothered looking up. So far, we've answered questions like...
Why do we fall in love?
Do plants have feelings?
Do periods actually sync up?
Who are better drivers, men or women?
Do mice actually like cheese?
And loads, loads, loads more.
Listeners send in those questions and we debunk them. We solve those mysteries so you don't have to.
I guess you could say...
We expand your mind while you wash your behind.
And this week, just like every other week, is no different, wonderful shower listeners. This is kind of a cool question.
It is kind of a cool question, isn't it? This is one of the questions that when it came in, I was like, meh, don't need to answer that. And then it kind of niggled in my brain and I was like, actually.
You were like, this is not okay. And then it was like, pfft. So Taz, what is the question this week?
This week's question is, what does okay mean? So this question was sent in by avid listener Luna O'Neill. And as I said, it was one of those questions that I almost overlooked until I thought about it.
Absolutely. Do you know what, Luna? You're right to ask. Okay is one of those things that you just take at face value. Like you're like, it's okay. Everything's okay. Life is okay. And then you don't. You realize that you don't actually know what you're saying. Like it's kind of, you swept the rug out from under our feet. So what does okay actually mean?
If you had to guess what you think it is.
Ah. Orangutan karaoke, because that'd be pretty cool. Okay means something cool. What about
think about it actually. Think of the context. So okay you'd say everything is
okay. I'm just like,
it's everything's fine.
It's grand.
Good.
Everything's grand. Like it's just like, it's a positive affirmation.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to like,
it's kind of like, it's not too positive. Like it's okay.
That's the thing, you know. Like other abbreviations make sense. I cannot think what okay stands for or stems from. I'm good at abbreviations.
You are.
Yeah.
Will I test some?
If you want.
Okay. BRB.
Bring Randy beer.
Marcus.
Big red bums.
BRB, you know what BRB means.
BRB, yeah. It's bouncing rugged boys.
What does that actually mean?
It means be right back.
Yes, good. Okay,
so basically you're like BRB, just going to the shops, XOXO, hon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What about RSVP?
Round, succulent, veiny pineapples.
What does RSVP mean?
Rich.
No, honestly.
Suckling, vicious piglets.
I feel like this is.
Répondez, s'il vous plaît.
Yes. I was wondering if you get that one. I didn't know that one until I looked it up.
Yeah.
What about TTFN?
Oh, God. Too touchy for Nathan.
Oh.
Nathan does not like being interfered with. TTFN. I'm not sure I know that one.
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now. Oh, that's the most English.
Ta-ta English for now.
Ta-ta for now. Right. Give
lol.
Me one.
Lol.
Obviously, laugh out loud. I'm not, you know, I could make jokes being like loads of lemons or lashings of la butter.
But,
okay.
Good story.
It is laugh out loud.
Good story for lol. So I was sitting at my Nana's house and her pal's sister had just passed away. So she was writing a condolence card to her pal. And she wrote something really, really lovely about, you know, a memory that she had with her friend's sister. And then ended it with, sorry for your loss, lol. And I was like, Nana, that is not funny.
No.
You cannot say that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then she revealed.
No. How long has she been using
that
this?
She thought it stood for lots of love and has been putting it on condolence cards for years.
Oh my
Imagine
God.
Imagine writing a lovely message and then putting it at the bottom of it, lol.
Do you know what? Susan was a wonderful woman. I remember the summers that we shared on the lake. She was always a hit with the boys and I'll miss her with all my heart. R.I.P. Lol.
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh God. When abbreviations go wrong.
I know,
TTFN, am I right?
Okay, so.
Back to okay.
Okay, yes. So, over the years, a variety of explanations have been offered for what exactly OK means. Some have argued that OK came from Native American Indian tribe Choctaw word OK.
OK?
OK.
OK.
And others have suggested that it came from a word in the Wolof language of sub-Saharan Africa.
Really?
Mm.
That's... Listen, as a speaker of Choctaw, Native American, and many sub-Saharan African languages, I don't... That's a bit of a... Bit of a stretch. I sort of thought, and I hoped it had something to do. This is what I thought, that it might be like an onomatopoeic word where it has something to do with the shape you make with like your mouth, where you go like okay, or like, you know, when you kind of do the little like hand emoji.
Yeah, that works so well. You know, like, when you're like, I'm okay.
Where like, you know, the okay. I know that you're listening to a podcast, but I want you to visualize me. I'm touching my my index finger to my thumb like an Italian puppet on a pasta packet, just going okay, it's a don mio, right? So yeah, like, is it, because that kind of makes, if you look at your hand,
it looks like an O and a K.
It's an O,
yeah,
and a three pronged K. Could that be it?
Well, believe it or not, I did actually look up whether that had any link to okay, because it does work so well. But it's actually thought that the answer to the origins of okay lies in 19th century Boston. So back then, it's believed that it was kind of like trendy or cool or humorous for writers to use abbreviations in their writing to kind of like make fun of bad spelling, like ha ha ha.
Really? So they were like being absolutely gas by throwing in abbreviations and making bad spelling.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, when Instagram introduced GIFs and everyone was just, like, covering every single thing they were doing in GIFs, that was trendy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, really.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That was what was going on in Boston in the 19th century.
Yeah.
Like, abbreviations were the absolute shit.
Yeah, abbreviations. So that's where kind of abbreviations started from.
Right, okay.
So it's thought that that's where okay came from. According to an article in the Smithsonian, celebrated etymologist Dr. Alan Walker Reed, who was born in 1906 and lived to about 2002.
Go on, Alan Walker Reed, 96. That's okay.
What a trooper.
Jesus.
Anyway, Walker argues that OK first appeared as an abbreviation for all correct, which is OLLKORRECT.
Is this like how they were being gas? They were like,
yeah,
all correct.
Yeah, like, so it first appeared in his abbreviation for all correct, which was a jokey misspelling of all correct in a satirical piece on grammar that was published in the Boston Morning Post in 1839. So how hilarious is it that they're misspelling a word, ha ha ha, and then the abbreviation came from that.
So do you think that, like, we should have been saying AC this whole time?
Very good point, actually.
Okay.
Very good point. Well, OK kind of found its feet again then, because it began to be used as a slogan during by the Democratic Party during the American presidential election of 1840, when it was used as the name of the political organization called the OK Club. So kind of OK started to the abbreviation OK started to appear in newspapers again.
Kind of took it found its legs.
Found
and
its
just
legs
like,
again. Yeah.
So, but I mean, the OK Club sounds like where you get relegated to if you're not good at something. Like, imagine going into your, like, you know, your child has had tryouts for the basketball team and they're like, I'm sorry, Miss Kelleher, but your son just doesn't have what it takes. I'm afraid he's going to have to join the OK Club. Dun, dun, dun.
So, guys, anyway, in this case, the letters stood for the birthplace of President Martin Van Buren, which was Old Kinderhook in New York. Van Buren was nicknamed Old Kinderhook, or OK for short. And kind of this saw, as I said, OK being continuously printed for the first time. And then this undoubtedly helped to popularise the term, although it did not get President Van Buren re-elected. That same year, an editorial commented on a pin that was put out for President Van Buren with the slogan OK. And he commented, the editorial commented, "Frightful letters. Significant of the birthplace of Martin Van Buren, Old Kinderhook, as also the rallying word of the democracy of the late election, all correct. Those who wear them should bear in mind that it will require their most strenuous exertions to make all things okay." And by saying to make all things okay, it kind of meant to make all things President Van Buren. But that kind of got translated as to make things okay, to make things better, to make things good, to make things fine.
So he was kind of going, old Kinderhook is like the place where the rallying of my democracy started. Make all places like old Kinderhook. And all of a sudden that became a positive affirmation.
Yes, exactly.
But then how did it stick and how did it begin to be used as like showing agreement? Like, how did it become depoliticized?
Okay, so the term may have died a bit after that election if it weren't for the advancements of the electronical telegraph throughout that century. So the handy little abbreviation OK was perpetuated as the telegraph became more and more prominent. And by the 1870s, it had become the standard way for telegraph operators to acknowledge receiving a transmission. It was even shorter than the simple yes. It was, you know, OK.
OK, I suppose telegraphs were generally charged by the letter. So, you know, you're saving them sweet, sweet pennies.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's the history of OK.
Yeah.
You know, President Van Buren, old Kinderhook, all of that.
All correct.
All correct. Gas lads in the Boston Chronicle in 1839. But does OK have an actual meaning now? Like, has it been defined by a dictionary?
Well, the Urban Dictionary says...
I love Urban Dictionary.
It's so good. This is brilliant. That OK is, and this whole sentence has loads of abbreviations in it.
Yeah.
The words you use when people ask how you are, but your life is a piece of shit, so you say, I'm OK, how are you?
OK. Right, so there you go. That is where OK comes from, Luna. I hope this is satisfying you. Do we have any OK facts? Like, facts about OK, not just like mediocre facts.
Why, of course we do. The phrase okie dokie first showed up in 1932 and originally came about as the English spelled OK as okie.
OK.
Yep.
OK. Yeah.
This was then brought back to America, where Americans pronounced this version with a long E, giving rise to the rhyme.
Oakley doakley.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okie. Oakley doakley. Only four letters, A, E, O, and L, are doubled at the beginning of a word. There are only four letters.
Really?
Yeah. Example, eel, ooze, llama, etc.
Aardvark.
And more words start with a double O than any others in the English language.
What is a word that starts with a double O?
Oh.
Okay, I'll take it. I'll accept it. Okay, do you have another fact?
Final one. No matter how high you count in the English language, you will never find a number that uses the letter K.
A kabillion. Right, well, you know what? That was okay.
That was all right.
That was all correct.
I was hoping that there'd be some mad reason behind OK, that we would uncover this mythical mystery that OK all along had
was,
this
it was actually
meaning.
Like an Illuminati code word.
Thank you so much, Luna O'Neill, for sending in that question. If you are like Luna and you have a question that you would like debunked in a bite-sized little chunk,
it couldn't be easier to get in touch with us. If you're on Facebook, just look up In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, hit that little get in touch button, that little message button, and go tappa 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 on your keyboard and send us a question, or if you want to say something nice, or if you want to send us pictures of your dogs. Still waiting on dog pictures. Shout out to anyone who sends us a picture of their dog. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter at In the Shower Pod.
If you want to do it the older fashioned way, I said old fashioned way for the last few episodes and my mom killed me. She goes, email's not old fashioned, Tara. But if you want to get in touch with us via email, you can get us at intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com. And even if you just want to message us and say hello, we would love to hear from you. But yeah, send us your questions in and we'd love to debunk them for you.
A couple of thank yous before we wrap up. Thank you to Alan, Paddy and all the crew in the Headstuff Podcast Network. We love what you guys do. Do check out some of the other Headstuff podcasts. There are some really brilliant ones that you can add to your subscribe list.
Next up, thank you so much, Flo Robinson, for your lovely cover art. We love you, Flo.
We love you, Flo. And you're in Dublin at the moment. It's great to see your smiling face. A big thank you to Dave Gertzman. Dave's Recordorama on Instagram. He came up with our catchy as hell theme song. And if you need a jingle made or any kind of music made, he is the man to talk to. He's a genius. He's like a modern day Mozart.
Last but not least, thank you so much to you for listening to this episode of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, for dedicating your ears to us for the last 15 or so minutes. If you enjoy this episode, good news, there's over 40 episodes, cannot believe that, that you can binge listen to, covering all sorts of mystery questions. If you listen to those episodes, it will make you a more interesting dinner party guest. It's a fact.
It'll make you sexier.
Marcus, next week's episode.
Next week's episode comes from Colin Hand.
Colin Hand asks,
why does helium make your voice go squeaky?
That episode's going to be out next Monday.
In time for your morning shower.
But in the meantime,
keep scrubbing. Thank you.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Forever man that finds his way. voice, another's must be silenced for a while. And now it's me. And now it's mine.
Well, that wraps up the Wednesday Morning After for another week. Keep on listening to CKUT.
Hey, this is Roxanne Shante, and of course you know I am listening to CKUT 90.3.
The rhymes you're about to hear me recite are dedicated to all of those that bite.
Mercredi 2 mars 2022, c'est donc l'émission Sleepy King Radio qui vous revient. C'est une émission un peu spéciale, un peu, je sais pas, on va pas faire une émission nécessairement particulièrement triste, mais il y a vraiment une ambiance. Là, on est passé de la COVID totale, qui n'était absolument pas finie par ailleurs, à la guerre en Ukraine, avec les propagandes de guerre d'un bar et de l'autre, avec les menaces, nos frissons, nos... Enfin, je vais faire une émission dont c'est toujours poésie et musique. Il y a Byron Cooley qui va nous lire un poème de sa collection Underground. Il va y avoir de la poésie, il va y avoir plein de musique de tous les genres. Mais je ne parlerai pas dans l'émission, c'est la seule et dernière fois que je parle. L'émission, vous savez, est archivée sur Mixcloud, donc vous pourrez toujours aller voir sur Mixcloud, il va y avoir une liste de tout ce qu'il va avoir joué, de tout ce que vous allez avoir entendu. Mais là, on va juste pendant 2 heures enchaîner, il va y avoir quelques petites publicités de CKUT, quelques petits rappels de ce que vous écoutez comme émission, mais pas vraiment d'intervention vocale de ma part, prendre 2 heures, donc